Hi, this is Eloy Oakley, Chancellor of the California Community Colleges, and you're listening to another episode of the California Community Colleges Chancellor's Office Podcast. Welcome back, everyone. You know, the California Community Colleges have been working to ensure that students from every background succeed in reaching their goals and improving the economic mobility of themselves and their families and their communities. Our system's vision for success sets out goals to significantly improve the lives of Californians, help them earn more credentials, and reduce the equity gaps that exist throughout the state. I've talked about the vision for success quite a bit, so I know our listeners have heard about that many, many times. Likewise, one of our sister institutions across the river, Arizona State University, has developed a new model for the American Research University, creating an institution committed to excellence, access, and impact. Their ASU charter, which was adopted in 2014, states that ASU is a comprehensive public research university measured not by whom we exclude, but rather whom we include and how they succeed, advancing research and discovery of public view and assuming fundamental responsibility for the economic, social, cultural, and overall health of the communities it serves. Very much mirroring many of the goals and aspirations we have here in the California Community Colleges. The charter also has some specific goals to meet the needs of the 21st century learner through personalized learning pathways, to maintain the fundamental principle of accessibility to all students qualified to study at the research university, and to maintain the university accessibility to match Arizona's socioeconomic diversity with undifferentiated outcomes for success. Again, very similar to our vision for success. So, to talk more about that and some of the other things that are going on around us in the world of higher education, I'm welcoming back the president of Arizona State University, Dr. Michael Crow. He's been with us before. For those of you who have lived under a rock and don't know Michael, he is an educator, a knowledge enterprise architect. I love that term. Science and technology policy scholar and a higher education leader. He's also the 16th president of Arizona State University. He became president July of 2002, and since then it's been spearheading ASU's rapid and groundbreaking transformative evolution. And everyone around the country knows Michael. So Michael, welcome back to the podcast.
Yeah, Eloy, it's nice to have a chance to get together and talk again. You're back from your journey to Washington, helping us to get everything right over there in Washington. And now you're back leading the largest public higher education institution in the country, which you do. And so it's just exciting to be able to sit down and talk a little bit.
Well, I appreciate the vote of confidence, although given what's going on in Washington, D.C. these days, I must say that I can't say I succeeded in everything you just mentioned. But nonetheless, I'm very confident, and we'll talk a little bit more about what's going on in the Biden administration in Washington, D.C. a little bit later in the podcast. But let me jump right in. So the last time you were with us seems like a million years ago, back in 2018. We were discussing the landscape of online learning at the time. A lot has changed since then. Schools, colleges, universities have been thrust into teaching and learning in remote or online platforms now because of the pandemic. Institutions that didn't even want to discuss online or remote learning are now having to do this on a daily basis. So, given all of these challenges, and particularly the challenges that low-income students and communities have faced, given access to technology, quality broadband, in this environment, in the last few years, what concerns do you have for students? And how do you think we best support our most vulnerable learners right now, given everything that's going on?
Thanks for that question. I'll give you sort of a funny answer in the sense that, you know, what concerns me the most is we have a faculty who are 20th century thinkers, and many are 20th century trained. And so they're all pre-advanced digital technology. And so they don't really understand it in the same way that people born, let's say, in the 90s, and since the 90s, see things or understand things. And so we have a mismatch. There's a huge openness to new digitally enhanced learning methodologies developed by people who understand how to develop the best digital learning modalities, developed by people who understand how to connect to the mind of a digitally enabled individual. And so we have this deep disconnect. So one of the things that we've tried to do at ASU is to empower our pre-21st century faculty with 21st century capabilities. And we've spent huge amounts of energy and creative energy around this notion of empowering people. So what I worry about is that we've got these people running around saying, well, this doesn't work, or this can't happen, or nobody's learning. Well, of course, they don't know what they're talking about. And so what we have is a disconnect between the experts, the teachers and the faculty, and the learners who are already, for the most part, digital. And so I think the pandemic has allowed some institutions like ours to accelerate our innovation. We've seen the greatest learning outcomes we've ever seen, the greatest diversity in our student body we've ever seen, the largest enrollment that we've ever seen, the largest number of graduates that we've ever seen. You know, all these things are going on in the middle of this two-year pandemic. And technology was our special ace in the hole, if you will, and our technology-empowered faculty. The concern that I have is that people are not realizing that the learner, and yes, not everyone is equally enabled in digital learning, but most are, and many more could be, and all will be at some point. And we need to get the rest of the educational enterprise at all levels caught up to that capability. And so what I worry about is that, you know, a lot of teachers, a lot of faculty, a lot of academic administrators, a lot of academic leaders are kind of just hoping all this stuff goes away.
Right.
I led a meeting when I used to be on the faculty at Columbia University at the faculty club in 1996, in which the faculty that came to that meeting, most of them determined that the internet was a fad and that it was going to go away. We now have billions of people on this planet connected through this somewhat out of control technology platform called the internet. And it's not a fad. It never will be a fad. It's roughly the equivalent of electricity in terms of the changing in the human trajectory because of it. And we just don't have academic institutions really taking full advantage of it yet, in my view.
Right. Well, Columbia certainly is very present on the internet these days. So something must have changed there. But Michael, you're in a state where you have a lot of low-income communities around you, a lot of communities that have limited access to broadband. How do we think about ensuring that students have access to the technologies that we're developing in places like ASU so that they can fully participate?
Well, you've got a couple of pathways. You know, finding access to the right hotspot or the right laptop or the right machine or whatever, that's a smaller part of the problem. And so what we did during the pandemic was, if people didn't have, either in our K-12 schools or in our university schools, if you didn't have what you needed, we just got it for you and gave it to you. And we raised a lot of money and we found some partnerships and we made some things happen. And so we're now working on, you know, microwaving broadband into communities that have low bandwidths. We're working on massive reinvestments in terms of broadband enhancement and then these temporary solutions. So we're doing that. We also have developed tools and techniques which can go into communities that, like we have some that in the Native American community in Arizona, have no electricity.
Right.
And so we're working off solar powered systems. And so that technological side, that's solvable, particularly with some of the infrastructure money that's now available, some of the pandemic money that's available. That's solvable. What's not solvable is the mindset issue about whether or not these tools can be used, whether or not you can engage the entire family of a student. And so it just requires a mindset shift. The mindset shift is more challenging. You know, can I really teach this way? Can I get learning outcomes this way? We, for instance, develop tools and techniques which are producing fantastic learning outcomes because of people having access to technological tools that enhances their learning outcomes. And once people see that, and once faculty members make that a part of what they're doing, once we do get the technological connections ubiquitous, it's all going to greatly enhance outcomes. We have to get people every machine that they need by whatever means necessary. And that may mean spending less on other things and more on that, for instance. And then we've got to get the content designed and delivered in ways where learning can be enhanced. And so we worked on all of those things during the pandemic. We trained 15,000 teachers. We found tens of thousands of additional K-12 learners that we connected with, tens of thousands of families that we connected with or more, all using technology. So we just found technology for everybody that raised their hand.
So you haven't launched your own satellite yet?
We have some satellites, but they're orbiting the moon. But we are looking at satellites and satellite enhancements and other ways to do things. Truthfully, these are trivial expenditures compared to what's at stake. So you said it at the opening, what's at stake in California and Arizona and the rest of the economy that California is sort of leading in the Western United States? You know, California is really the center of this broad regional economy. The Pacific Rim, you know, facing from the port of Long Beach and the port of Los Angeles and the port of Oakland, these three huge ports, you know, in California alone, it's unbelievably the best moment to move things forward. But human capital is where we lag. And so we just feel that you know, these things are just essential to economic success.
So ASU's always been an important transfer partner for us in the California Community Colleges for many reasons. It's close by. A lot of Californians in Arizona, particularly in the Phoenix area. But you've recently begun to grow your presence in California. Tell us about the expansion of your footprint here, including the Los Angeles facility, which I know very well growing up in LA, and some of your future plans.
Yeah, so we view Los Angeles as a global city, one of the two most important cities in the United States, New York and Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. You might be surprised that immediately after New York City, the second largest trading partner for Los Angeles County is Phoenix. And so the Southern California, Arizona economy, the Silicon Valley, Arizona economy are deeply linked and deeply integrated. And so because of that, we've just decided that we need to do everything that we can to be present in the region as opposed to politically constrained around just the borders of California. So we've launched a fabulous new facility in downtown Los Angeles. We renovated with our partners the Herald Examiner building on Broadway and 11th Street. We're launching graduate programs there. We've built a community center there for community groups to work with. Los Angeles Community College District had some events there and others are working there. We have it open for use. We have launched a new Sidney Poitier New American Film School headquartered in Los Angeles and Phoenix together. So we have a lot of stuff that's going on and a lot of things that we're moving forward with. And what we think is that it's time for academics and academic institutions to stop pretending that they are little cottage industries in the black forest of northern Germany, you know, sitting with their little chimney, you know, designing all their own little arts and crafts. And it's time to work together, to scale, to work with whoever, wherever, and whenever anyone can make something available to help learners to be successful across the entirety of our society. So that's our mantra of our institution, inclusion versus exclusion, and measures student success. And so we have tens of thousands of interactions with students in California. We have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of companies that we're working with, and those companies are located here and there. And so we just find that the region is really important to be connected to. And somewhere along the way, they said the Colorado River, actually the Jesuits got it right. Arizona is a part of the California province, according to the Jesuits, at least for the last 500 years. So we're pretty much operating under the California province model.
Well, I might have to get back to Governor Brown about that, since he's probably very familiar with that model.
Yes.
So if you don't mind, I'm going to ask you a question out of left field. Some people may view Arizona State and California as a competitor, as an institution trying to come in and gobble up enrollments. What would you say to people who view your work in California as competitive in nature or as not similar quality to some of the California institutions?
Well, you know, what's interesting about that, so let's break that into two parts to the question. So the competitive part and the quality part. So on the competitive part, you know, I don't know how anyone can believe there's competition when we're so underperforming right now on every single level.
Right.
With every institution that we've already built, we're still inadequate, 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 because we're still only graduating as college graduates in the lower quarter of family incomes, about 8% of the population, whereas in the upper quarter of family incomes, we're graduating 80% of the population, give or take. I mean, are you kidding me? And so I can walk you through chapter and verse the socioeconomic structure of higher education in the United States. It's, in my view, become very, very British. It grants the rights of aristocracy through selectivity, and through that selectivity then grants some sort of status in our society. Well, that doesn't work for us. So there's no effort on our part. We don't think there's any competition with the schools in California. And if the schools from California were here in Arizona, hallelujah. Are you kidding me? Because all of us are incapable of really moving forward at the scale that we need to. What we're able to do because of our technology is move forward at scale. So we build a film school. We can put not 300 students in a film school. We can put 4,000 students in a film school because of the way we operate, the way that we think, which then segues to your comment about quality. I'm not sure exactly. I sort of want to roll my sleeves up and make those into fighting words. But what I mean by that is, so we have the admission standards at ASU for all of our online degrees, where we have 80,000 plus students, and all of our on-campus degrees, where we have almost 80,000 students. They're the same admission standards for the University of California at Berkeley or Los Angeles from the summer of 1950. Exactly the same. UCLA and UC Berkeley were already world-class research universities in 1950. They admitted everyone that had a B average, at least, and completed 15 courses with a B as the score. You know how this works. Well, we still do that. That's our admission standard.
Mm-hmm.
So the quality of our faculty is the same. The performance of our research faculty, the same. The only thing that's different is that we have a very, very large student body because we're admitting, as you said in the opening intro, we admit at the level of qualification,
mm-hmm.
not at the level of how much space we have
right.
or how many slots we can have in the university. We admit every qualified student. Now, we think that is important for some research universities to do. Not all, but some.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the way that we're evolving the university. So our quality, you know, from a research perspective, I think of the 700 or so schools funded by the National Science Foundation, we're funded in the top 20
mm-hmm.
by the National Science Foundation. That's a tremendous achievement, more than Berkeley or UCLA, not because we're better than them, but because our faculty are the same as theirs, just with a very different mission.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got to tell you, from my perspective, given how many students that we turn away from UC, from CSU, personally, I see ASU as just a tremendous asset to students here in California. So at least one Californian thinks you're on the right path.
Well, thank you.
Let me transition to some of the innovations you've recently been involved with. And you and I have a friend who we both know by the name of Doug Becker, and ASU have recently partnered with the Dreamscape Immersive. I think I got a little bit of a glimpse when you were featuring it at the last ASU GSV conference. This is what many would consider the world's leading virtual reality company to digitally enhance education and deliver a fully immersive virtual reality learning system. Tell us a little bit about that partnership, how it's going, and how you're going to leverage this VR technology.
Yeah, so the cool thing is, and your listeners will laugh when I tell you this, so we did a partnership with a company in Los Angeles called Dreamscape Immersive. We've built a joint venture called Dreamscape Learn. Dreamscape Learn, since the pandemic, probably had more than 150 people working on this project. And this semester, we finally have launched the first class, Biology 181, which is our introductory biology class for biology majors. And about, well, I don't know the exact number, but several hundred biology majors this year. And when I say this next part, none of this is fake.
Mm-hmm.
They're taking their biology lab on an alien zoo orbiting Earth in virtual reality, which has traveled throughout the galaxy for tens of thousands of years and collected species managed by an unknown other species. And so I swear to you, you put on these virtual reality glasses and you enter into this lab, and it's not a game. You are a scientist with other students in this alien zoo, studying organisms, evaluating organisms, determining ecological system design, working on diseases. And so at the end of Biology 181, we already know this from our early results. Here's what we're going to have. The students that take this alien zoo lab, because of its emotional activation of the educational process itself, because of that, we're going to see a 27% to 30% improvement in their outcome, which means the bell curve is garbage.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really mean anything. It's just we've had people that don't know how to teach certain kinds of things to the full spectrum of learners. Our F students have become C students. Our C students become A students. Our A students become master learners.
Mm-hmm.
You take all of this together, and now we've got an unbelievable way to move whoever wants to be STEM literate, whoever wants to be biology literate, everyone that ever dreamed of being a biology major, dreamed of doing whatever biology majors ultimately do. We have a path for you which will get you over whatever you need or accelerate your thinking to the fastest possible route, because we found a way to take biology undergraduate laboratories and make them literally learning altering. They alter the way that you learn. And so this is now up and operational. When we get you over here to take a deeper dive,
mm-hmm.
we have multiple labs, hundreds of students going through it. And this is all with an LA company.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've already decided to launch the next round of courses. So the next round of courses outside of biology will be in global climate change. We're sick and tired of people not understanding global climate change. We're sick and tired of people not understanding what it means. So we're going to create an environment where you're going to go inside glaciers. You're going to become a water molecule. You're going to work with other students and go through things. And we guarantee you that by the time that you come out of this, you will have an emotional attachment to the Earth. How can you understand a thing as big, as diverse, or as complicated as the Earth without something like this? So this, I mean, Eloy, this has been, you and I have not had a chance to talk about this since you saw it. It is over the top beyond anything that we could have imagined.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of students using the software to build new learning environments, new drop-down classrooms. And so just within the last few times I've done this, I've been to these Mayan temples in the Yucatan, mm-hmm. on the top of the temple, in the jungle, down into the temple, moving around, seeing. I've been inside Egyptian tombs with the hieroglyphics around me, sitting with other students at a table in the tomb, moving around, learning in different kinds of ways. I mean, it's it's really something. And so we're very excited about this technology.
Well, I spent a lot of time in the Yucatan on vacation, so this could save me a lot of money. But look, I'm sure you realize this, but whether you're in the halls of California State Legislature or in the halls of Congress, sometimes you have people roll their eyes about, well, you know, this isn't real learning. There's no way that we can replace a physical environment with a virtual reality environment. And there's nothing better than learning within the four walls of an institution, because that's the way we've always done it. What would you say to them?
Well, I would say that you're uninformed. And so you need to modernize your brainwave pattern, because you're just cycling back, you know, AM radio waves from your dad's 63 Chevy. And so, you know, you're punching WLS, world's largest store, the big radio station in Chicago, I remember from being a kid. You're just listening to AM radio on a car radio. I mean, that isn't at all what we have. It is, once you put in pedagogy, mm-hmm. and design, all of our faculty are involved in all these things. Our faculty are designing these courses, designing things. What we're seeing are learning outcomes that we didn't think were achievable. Mm-hmm. Now, you got to see it to believe it, because if all you've ever driven was a 63 Chevy with a simple little AM radio, there's no way you're going to understand it. Or if you think that it has anything to do with Facebook or Twitter, it has nothing to do with any of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with gaming technology. This is advanced, emotionally driven learning to enable people to learn things that we're not very successful at getting broad spectrums of the society to be able to learn. Mm-hmm. And so you just got to see it. And then the other thing, by the way, is that, you know, we're obsessive over here in Arizona. And so we measure everything. So we measure learning outcomes by student, learning outcome by class, by unit, by fractions of the classes, by individual laboratories, everything that you can imagine. So we've actually got the data. And so there is data, you know, does the kid understand? Does the student understand? Does the adult learner understand biology or not? Mm-hmm. And when they do, and you say, this is how they understand it, and we have this like 90% success rate, at least for us, we're moving forward. Mm-hmm. And those 63 Chevys, they're really beautiful. They're really fantastic cars, but man, they just don't have any tech. They have no tech.
Well, that's for sure. Well, and I'm old enough to remember a 63 Chevy.
So am I. My dad had one.
And I'm old enough to remember the Herald Examiner landing on my front porch.
I remember both those things. In fact, in 1963, I lived in Chula Vista, California. And so there were a lot of beautiful Chevrolets that I really loved in the neighborhood that we lived in. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's turn our attention to another place where virtual reality exists, Washington, D.C. You know, the last several years have been interesting years for our country. And for higher education, the Biden administration has come in and proposed their higher education agenda, much of it in the print of the Build Back Better plan, which currently is stalled in the Senate. So how do you see the Biden administration's agenda so far? What hope do you hold out for D.C. helping us move forward with the important work of helping our communities and our states recover from the pandemic and prepare students for economic mobility? Do you see any signs of hope, or what do you wish they'd be doing different?
Well, I always see signs of hope in the fledgling democracy that we are. We're constantly trying to find ways to move ahead. And the Biden administration is putting more resources into Pell Grants, putting more resources into graduate student training, putting more resources into HBCUs and other minority-serving institutions and Hispanic-serving institutions more specifically. And so I see the strong desire to move with additional resources. I'd like to see more effort on reform of policy. I think that colleges should have more say about things like student loans and so forth to help people to be able to graduate. Mm-hmm. I think colleges should be more transparent, and there should be forced transparency about success of students and progress towards either certificates or degrees, not just degrees, but certificates and courses and so forth and so on. I think that that's important. I think that the national government should find a set of innovative institutions and begin working with them to stimulate and demonstrate reform. Mm-hmm. And they haven't done that significantly. I support as much financial aid as one can find in the budget, because the returns are very significant. But I also think that we should have reform in financial aid policy. Mm-hmm. We should have ways in which people can have their tuition paid but they then pay back something for the good of the order from their future salaries. And if they're a teacher, then they pay a little bit less. And if they're a stockbroker, they pay a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And so I'd love to see additional reforms of those types. I think the other thing, and you're more intimately familiar with this than I am, but you know, we need national goals. Mm-hmm. So President Obama in February of 2009 outlined unbelievable national goals. Mm-hmm. This is now, what is it now? 13 years ago. Mm-hmm. 13 years ago. In fact, 13 years ago, coming up in a couple of weeks. And we haven't hit those goals. And we haven't made much progress on those goals.
Right.
You know, high school graduation rate, college going rate, college graduation rate. And so we need national educational attainment goals, like every other major industrialized country has that we're competing against. Mm-hmm. We need to stop whining about how others are beating us in the market or beating us in education or beating us in technology or beating us in the technology markets. And we need to stop whining and start doing something.
Right.
So we need national goals. We need to then invest towards those national goals, and we need to start holding people accountable. So you know, as well as I do, that more than half the people that start college never finish in the United States. Mm-hmm. There's only one other country in the industrialized world that works that way. And we don't want to be on that list. We want to be on the list where if you go to college, you have a 90% chance of graduating.
Right.
Now, to do that, that means reform everywhere, including coming out of Washington. So mm-hmm. I'll just say one other thing. Washington is way too rigid on what's a class, what's a credit, what's this, what's a semester. Right now, here's a terrible, terrible thing. So let's say that a kid starts at ASU as a freshman, first year student, and mom gets sick in the second semester and they drop out, or they have an operation in the second semester and they stop taking classes and then come back in the sophomore year, they're listed as a dropout. You know, so it's just so weird to me. They don't even know how to count who's in college.
Right.
Or what's going on. So we need a lot of reforms in what I call systems level management here, mm-hmm. with systems level objectives. And so that would be something that I hope that the Biden administration can put some energy into.
So let me ask you one last question, then I want to turn our attention as we close to the upcoming ASU-GSV summit. But before we get there, I mean, based on, you know, some of the things that you've brought up and some of the things that we've talked about, two issues really stand out to me that the administration's talked a lot about, and I know is struggling to figure out what to do with. One is, how do we create more access, particularly to the growing number of Hispanic Latino students throughout the country, and not just in the West anymore? And the second is, what do we do about student debt? A lot of talk about forgiving student debt, but not a lot of talk about how we stop the cycle of student debt. So what advice would you have on those two fronts?
You know, on anything about college, we've got to stop thinking that we're going to build another 10,000 colleges. Mm-hmm. And we're going to take all these students and move them to these 10,000 colleges. We need to take every college or university that we can that's scalable and triple or quadruple their scale. And so we need to figure out how to do that. We need to take a notion, and this would be true with a lot of families, including Hispanic families. We need to find a way to take college to them, mm-hmm. to the community, because a lot of close-knit communities, you know, they're not really interested in sending their children away. They're not really interested in breaking up the family unit, even for a short period of time. And so you should still be able to go to college. And even a community college might not be close enough. Mm-hmm. And so we need to find a way to project college into the communities. And then on this issue of debt, you know, almost all of the debt is held by people that didn't graduate. Mm-hmm. And huge amounts of the debt are held by people that didn't graduate from for-profit universities. And so we need to start understanding who has the debt, why do they have the debt, and we need to come up with strategies to help them to finish college. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just a lot more powerfully positive than just attacking debt.
Right.
And then in terms of limiting debt going forward, I already said the one thing, which I really strongly believe in. I mean, we've got kids here who were on scholarships that included room and board, who then borrowed money from the government so they could rent an apartment. And I'm like, no. How about not? You know, how about we help you graduate with no debt,
right,
and take care of your room and board needs along the way, for instance. And so we need new rules about debt and new ways to think about debt. Mm-hmm. We also need to come up with ways in which students have many, many more ways to generate resources while they're in college. So we still have this fantasy,
right,
that I'm a rich kid from a prep school and I get to go to a New England four-year elite college. Why would I work? I don't need to work. And so we need to understand that the college system is set up right now as if I am a rich kid from a prep school, mm-hmm. and I'm not going to have to work, and I can go there and I can study for 4 years and so forth and so on. We need a whole other model about debt how you take the debt, how you pay the debt off. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe universities should be given resources in which students can then work jobs that then pay their tuition, and it becomes both employment opportunity as well as a way to pay for their tuition. Now, they call that work study, but work study is trivial compared to the actual opportunity. And so one could start thinking about national service, work study, national this, national that, all kinds of things. We just haven't been very creative because we've got too many colleges arguing from too many different perspectives. And what we need is, like, who's really interested in graduating the people that live in the United States today? Mm-hmm. Why don't we just get those people together? And why don't we figure out what they need? And why don't we get them going in that direction?
Let's turn our attention to what's coming up in April. So ASU and groups from the Silicon Valley have been collaborating, particularly GSV and ASU together, to create this huge EdTech conference that's really become a thing. I mean, it's really become a go-to place to meet people who are innovating. So for the upcoming ASU GSV summit in April that will be held in San Diego, your old hometown.
Right.
What can we expect from the lineup this year, from the programming? What should we be looking for?
So I think this is our 13th or 14th year. I don't remember exactly, but we've been doing this for a while. In 2020, we had 15,000 people attend the meeting virtually. Last year, we had several thousand in San Diego. In fact, just a few months ago in 2021, with thousands coming in online and thousands there physically with us in San Diego. Mm-hmm. And so what we're looking for here is to just continue this focus on the acceleration of innovation. What we're interested in is accelerating innovation. So if you don't think that you need to innovate, don't come. You know, if you don't think that there's any possibility that technology is valuable relative to student success, don't come. And so if you do, then you're going to see idea after idea, technology after technology, leader after leader, investor after investor who's trying to figure out how to make this work. And so it's really a great opportunity to come together between the education sector, the private sector, the investment sector, the policy sector, all coming together. And what we're hoping for is that we just create yet again another moment where creativity can be enhanced. I know from our perspective, we've done at least 200 technology deals. Mm-hmm. With companies now integrated into our learning platforms at ASU from our participation in ASU GSV.
Wow. So is there going to be another opportunity to see what's going on with the Dreamscape immersive technology?
No, but we are going to probably have a mini summit where everybody can come and just see what we've done.
Nice.
Either in Los Angeles, Phoenix, or a couple other places where we have things set up. So
sounds great. All right. Well, I really appreciate you being with us, Michael. Any last words for our listeners before we begin to close?
No, all I'll say is that, you know, the innovators got to stick together here. Mm-hmm. You know, move out and come back either with your shield or on your shield, meaning go ahead and sacrifice yourself to make the changes. We got to stop worrying about the people that don't want to innovate. It's like, okay, well, we have to, because we've decided that we have to educate more people at the highest possible level, and we have to educate people across the totality of their life. Not everybody wants to do that. Okay.
Right.
Well, then good. Don't slow us down by complaining that it doesn't work, because you don't really know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one way or the other, we're moving forward. This pandemic has done, if nothing more, beyond creating a lot of pain and frustration, it has certainly forced us to think about and embrace innovation for the sake of Americans and communities throughout the country. So really appreciate the work you and your team are doing. And thanks for being on the show again.
Yep. Thanks, Eloy. Nice to see you.
All right. Well, you've been listening to another episode of the California Community College's Chancellor's Office podcast. I've had the pleasure of talking to Dr. Michael Crow, president of Arizona State University and leading the way on many innovations in higher education. Thanks for listening, and we will be back soon.
Be sure to join us for the next California Community College's podcast. This has been a California Community College's presentation.